over a year now, and today we're going to be talking about caring for a loved one, and we want to learn how to do that with excellence, compassion, and resilience. How do we give care in a way that honors God in the highest way possible? Matthew 25:40 says that Jesus said, "Whatever you did for the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it for me." So at its heart, what we're talking about today is caring for Jesus, which is an incredibly high calling and an honor to get to do. I'll tell y'all a little bit about me. I'm an ER nurse. I've been a nurse now for about 3.5 years. That's me and my husband, Ryan. We just got married a couple months ago. And we both work at Cape Fear Valley Hospital. So I'm down in the ER and he does surgery. That's a picture of me pretending to help with surgery. I don't really know anything about it. And working in the ER, I have gotten to bear witness to a lot of people who are caregivers full time and have worked alongside them to care for their family members. Some specific ones I can remember is a wife that I got to serve alongside who had a husband who was paralyzed, and all he wanted to do was preach to the nurses. And so she helped him remember the Bible verses that he had memorized for his little sermons to the nurses, and that was a big thing for him to maintain dignity. Even while his body was wasting away, he got to serve people. Another one I remember is a nursing aide who skipped her birthday to stay in the ER just because she didn't want her client to be all by themselves. And then a really hard one that I remember is standing beside a dad who was making end-of-life decisions for his disabled son, who was 21. And that's unimaginable, a really hard thing to talk about. And one part of me never wants any of those for any of you. One part of me abhors death and is disgusted by it. But another part of me recognizes how much I saw the gospel and all the way that those people gave care, and how much better I know Jesus because I got to work alongside people like that. Good caregivers look so much like Jesus to the outside world, and caregiving is one of the most sanctifying things that you can be a part of. So in a big sense, I am truly thankful for suffering because it leads to perseverance and then to character and then to hope. And so I hope for all of you that you get the chance to be a caregiver. And I lament for you and your family's suffering, but I also rejoice because the world will know the gospel better because of it. Hey, come on in, no worries. And so, with all of that cheery and lighthearted stuff, I do want to give a trigger warning at the beginning of this presentation. Feel free to cry. I will probably cry too. If you need to step out, just make sure somebody follows whoever steps out so that nobody is alone in the hallway. And if it is helpful for you guys, feel free to speak up. It can be really meaningful to share a story that comes up in your head because we want to be the church, the bride of Christ, and we are suffering in this together. All right, so another character that I would like to introduce is Difficult Conversations Darla. I was thinking about how to maybe keep this as lighthearted as possible. So she's a character who's going to help us through some challenging conversations, and I will need two people who are willing to play Darla and who are willing to be a little bit silly.
I'll be silly.
Okay, Darla number one and Darla number two. So the thing about Darla, at a certain point in this presentation, she will be diagnosed with foreign accent disorder. She believes that she's from Great Britain, and she will develop a very thick British accent, so please play your parts well.
We should have known this piece of information. I specifically shared
it. She also drinks lots and lots of English tea, and she wants to go to Great Britain, so she's always trying to run away to the airport. So we are tasked with the difficult task of keeping her safe. So we'll meet her in a little bit. All right, so y'all can turn to the first page in your handouts. There's a little table here, and there's another table on the back of it. We aren't going to go through all of this, but these are just some things to think about, where if you have a loved one that you're caring for, you might want to discuss these things with your primary care provider. We'll touch briefly on a few things that have been very noteworthy to me in the ER. So the first category is mobility. With mobility, one of the main things we're trying to prevent is falls. Can anyone take a guess at what might be the main cause of falls, especially in older adults? Like, what situation would they be most likely to fall in?
Tripping.
Tripping? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a common way that they fall. It can be mechanical, they can pass out.
Loss of muscle and strength.
Exactly. That's a huge cause of falls. Taylor, what did you say?
Said in the bathroom, like shower, things like that.
That's a bingo. And specifically people who are trying to rush to the bathroom, especially when older people are dealing with incontinence and they maybe don't want to go to like Pampers or Briefs yet, people are trying to run off to the bathroom. And it's the same story every single day in the ER. Somebody was rushing to get to the bathroom, and then we have their knee is broken or they have a hip fracture. So that's an important thing to think about with your family member. We want to bring up the conversations about Pampers or Briefs early. If you always see them running off to the bathroom, it's not embarrassing. You wear diapers when you're little, and a lot of people wear them when they get old. It's just a part of life. It's what we got to do. So if we bring up that conversation early, then they might be a little more open to it when the time comes. And then we're going to touch briefly on memory problems, and we're going to use Darla number one to help us talk about memory problems. So the situation here is that we encounter our family member Darla walking around the neighborhood, and she looks really confused. She doesn't look like she knows where she's going. And you're driving in your car, so you pull over, you roll down your window, and you say, "Hey, Darla, do you need any help? Are you okay?"
"I was just talking and taking a walk to my favorite tea shop. I decided to take the long way home." Wait, am I going Australian? Sorry. "Of course I know my way home, but would you mind giving me a lift?"
"Oh, sure. Jump in my car. You can come along with me. But there's no tea shop around here, Darla. Do you remember, like, where you are or what day it is?" Sorry, I'm putting her on the spot.
"I don't know."
"She doesn't know. Well, Darla, that's really strange that you can't remember what day it is, and you're also wearing the same clothes that I saw you in last week, and I just drove past your mailbox, and I noticed that the mailbox is totally full, like no one's been checking the mail. And then I saw you driving yesterday, and you weren't using any turn signals, like you were kind of erratic in your driving. So I was just kind of concerned about you." So now we've identified Darla is shocked. We've identified that there is something going on with Darla. What do you guys think that we should do next with Miss Darla? And here is some ideas for you. Should we A, leave her alone because she has always been an independent lady and we don't want to offend her by saying anything's wrong?
No.
This is a pretty easy question and answer here. B, should we use logic to convince Darla that she is not British?
No.
Maybe not. What would be a good alternative if somebody is convinced of a reality that is not true? What would be an alternative to trying to talk them out of it? Like, what were some things that we could talk about instead?
Talk about England.
We could talk about England. Yes, she wants to talk about England. So let's talk about England.
Mm-hmm. Let's get her comfortable and take her to the ER room.
Very good. Yes. That's exactly what I'd love to touch on, is get her comfortable. So I might talk about England a little bit just to kind of develop some rapport with her and make her comfortable with me. But then I'm going to reorient to her current surroundings. So like if I was trying to get Darla to eat a sandwich, I might say, "Oh yeah, I love tea too, but look at your sandwich. Doesn't that look so good? Aren't you hungry?" So we're reorienting to reality, but we're not trying to talk her out of England or Britain, because that's not going to happen if she has something that is declining over time. C, should we drop her off at the ER by herself? Because those doctors are smart. They'll figure out that she's confused and they'll know what to do with her.
No.
Surprisingly, this has actually happened to me multiple times, and then sometimes people run away and we have to send somebody to find them, because we don't know automatically that your family member has dementia. We do our best, but we don't know everything. D, this is the obvious answer. We should arrange a conversation with Darla and her primary care provider to discuss our concerns. Sounds super easy, right? You just schedule it, show up, no problem, right? No, not so easy. All right, so we are gonna come back to what we do when that is not so easy. We'll just touch briefly on a few more of these categories. So we already talked a little bit about memory problems and housekeeping. With housekeeping specifically, one of the most important things is just that somebody needs to be going to their house regularly. So if there's an older adult who lives alone, or maybe somebody younger who has a disability or a chronic illness who lives by themselves, there needs to be somebody getting eyes on their house regularly, because you can recognize all the things on this list, no problem. But if nobody has been over there for a month and somebody's declining, then we're going to be in a much worse spot than if you catch these signs early. And then we already talked about driving safety, money, and medications. I just want to touch briefly on if your parents are aging and they already are diagnosed with a chronic illness, it's good to make sure that somebody else has access to like their bank account passwords if you need to, and that maybe you aren't taking over control of their finances, but you're kind of just keeping an eye out and an ear out for any unusual spending. Or like if you go over to their house and you see the bills piling up and they're not really paying the bills, maybe that's something to look into and talk about with them. And then medications can easily get really confusing. We have a lot of older adults coming into the ER, and we ask them, like, do you take a blood thinner? Do you take blood pressure medicine? And they have no idea. They're like, just look at the list. It's in the computer. And they don't know what they're taking. So when you make your medication list, don't just have the names and the dosages on there, but write one or two words, your doctor can help you with this, about what that medication is for. Like, this is my water pill that helps me get rid of extra water. This is my blood pressure pill. This is my blood thinner. To help keep it straight, and then we'll talk later about a go bag that you take to the ER that has that list in there. And then at the bottom of the money and medications part, it talks about, do they have access to narcotics, benzodiazepines, or hard liquor? This is a really hard one to have conversations with your family about, and often one that they don't want to talk about, but it's a really common reason that we see, especially older adults coming to the ER, as they start dealing with depression and finding ways to deal with that. If they have back pain and they have like this huge bottle of Percocets at home where they have access to a lot at once, maybe that's something to talk with their pharmacist or primary care provider about. Maybe they only need access to like 10 of those pills at once so that they're not popping them all the time.
Can I say something about the depression? A lot of them don't know that they're depressed. They're just angry.
Exactly.
They're getting angry and frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
It's a form of depression.
Very true. A lot of the time in older adults, depression can present a lot differently. Looks like anger, looks like apathy, might look like eating or drinking less. And those are often hard to catch if you're not with them often. So like some things to be looking for whenever you are meeting up briefly with a family member: does their mouth look dry? If you're looking at their skin, does their skin look super dry? There's like an easy test. I don't know how you do this without being weird to someone, but if you pull up the skin on your hand and it snaps right back, that means that you're hydrated enough. If you pull it up and it stays up there, you're really dehydrated. That's another thing that is easy as we get older. People will drink less water because they don't want to run to the bathroom all the time. I have met so many older adults who tell me that they do that. And I haven't figured out yet how to convince them otherwise. If you figure that out, let me know. But just making sure that they are drinking water, finding ways to like get them a water bottle, or just reminding them of the importance. It's going to take multiple conversations probably. And then another thing that can contribute to depression, if they're having trouble talking to people because of an issue with hearing or seeing, that's going to make them feel totally disconnected. So they might just need a little bit of help making an appointment with the eye doctor or getting their hearing aid fixed. So don't be on them all the time, but just check in with them. Be like, is your hearing aid working good? And then if you guys have any questions on anything in this table, just circle it, and we're going to have a Q&A time at the end to go into more details about these. So let's touch really quickly on what should we do if your family member is in denial. If you identify these issues and you come to them and they're like, no, I don't want you to come to my doctor's appointment, that's none of your business. Do y'all have any ideas, or do you have any experience with this in the past? Right. Nobody wants to admit that they're confused. That's like a profound loss of dignity. Right. So what would you do, like, if they're disagreeing with you and they're saying, I'm not confused, you are? In the back.
Well, I've noticed with my grandparents, just my grandma, sometimes coming from me as a granddaughter, not like she doesn't know, or she's, you know, doesn't agree with what I'm trying to communicate, but she'll listen to her doctor, or
Mm-hmm. If her sister tells her the same thing that I'm telling her.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing we're having to work on is, like, I can't usually give my opinion. It's not received well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and sometimes my mom can. So it just depends on who it is for her, who's telling her something. Because I'll even ask the doctor any appointment. Can you tell her that she need, you know, or tell grandpa that he needs to drink more water? And then as soon as the doctor says it, it's like, oh, okay. So that's a big thing we're having to learn. Like, maybe it can't come from me as a granddaughter. It has to come from her sister or even the doctor.
Right. So true. I couldn't have said it better myself. I can't count how many patients that I have argued with in the hospital who have been like, you're obsessed with falls, you're obsessed with my blood pressure medication. They call me all kinds of names and stuff. Older people want control of their life just like we do. Anybody in any situation wants control. They want dignity. They want to be able to make their own choices. So there's only so much that we can do. We can get a team of people around them, doctor, other family members, to try and talk with them, but we can't really force any changes on them until they get to a point of grave disability. There's a law in most states and in North Carolina where if somebody is gravely disabled, like unable to care for themselves, so like if somebody is covered in like gross stuff and hasn't eaten in 3 days, that's like gravely disabled, you can call 911 and that will be like a legal order for them to come to the hospital. But up to that point, we can't force someone to get the care that they need. All we can do is pray and talk to them. But God can turn a king's heart as easily as a stream of water, and he is surely working in your family member's heart.
And it depends on why they're losing their memory or whatever. Because sometimes when they're being disagreeable, if you just kind of give it a break, you know what I'm saying, then they forgot they have the disagreement. So that's a wonderful thing. And then you could approach the subject in another way because that one way didn't work very well.
So true. That is so good. You've got a lot of wisdom.
I was wondering about in terms of, especially when they're in denial about driving, like, how do you go about, like, when they get to the point of, we really need to take your license away, like,
mm-hmm.
What are the steps for that?
Taylor, I think you brought this up as well.
I'm sorry, I missed part of it.
No. It was our private conversation before. I don't know if you have any wisdom to share from your experience. I remember you saying that you wish that it had been more of a conversation with the primary care provider so that it wasn't just you guys.
Yes. So my grandmother, we had to take her license away, and it didn't go over well. But when the doctor told her that it was time, then she was like, oh, my family's not completely out of line. Yes. But yes, and I think that's something that doctors do now. I think you can you talk to them about that? And they can make those decisions
mm-hmm.
now. Yes,
mm-hmm.
like when they didn't when we had to have that conversation. Mm-hmm.
What I experienced with the car issue, you had to be a little more sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
So we would unhook batteries, we would do other things. And then we eventually told her, I'm sorry, your car is just getting so old.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so, and I know that's bad, but that's the point, because I had a grandmother who was very independent,
mm-hmm.
and so we had to start doing things like that, because she didn't know a lot of mechanical,
mm-hmm.
and so we had to start doing things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's sneaky, but just for her safety and others, we had to start doing mechanical
yeah.
things that we knew she wouldn't.
And we asked a friend to come, and more
did.
Of us like it
sure.
She chauffeured, but she was her friend,
mm-hmm.
and that was
that
held
too.
Her dignity, but it still made her safe.
That's what I was going to suggest,
mm-hmm.
because they want to be able to have the free, be able to go where they want to go, but
right.
You don't want them to get in the car and go.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of say, hey, is there anywhere
mm-hmm.
you want to go today?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go here. So they're not putting you out, but then
right.
they have the company, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, very
so
good. Yeah.
That works really well.
Those are all great answers, and this is why caregiving is a community job,
yeah.
because this isn't the only situation. There's going to be time after time where you're stumped and you need a really creative solution that preserves dignity but also doesn't hurt safety.
Yeah, and you get emotionally involved too. You need some support.
Right, so true. So circle any of the topics on the table that you want to talk about during Q&A, and we will go into more detail there later. And then I want to touch briefly on burnout. So the situation that you're in now is you were able to have a great conversation with Ms. Darla. You convinced her to go to the PCP, primary care provider, and he diagnosed her with foreign accent disorder. And he said that it is progressive. So you are going to need to have some more help caring for her. She's not going to be able to live alone eventually. So you talk about options. You decide, should we move her in with an aide, like a home health care aide? But that might be hard to pay for. You're not sure if you want to do that. You might want to move her into memory care assisted living, but that's also expensive, and she does not want to move out of the house. And then you talk about maybe you should move in with her. And that's what you guys decide together is going to be the best option for Darla. So you guys go meet with an elder care attorney who is able to help you guys figure out a way for Medicare to help pay you to be her full-time caregiver. He is really smart and can navigate the healthcare and social work system to help you figure out the best way to get that paid for since you're her full-time caregiver. And so you start being her full-time caregiver, but you're having a really hard time adjusting. It's just kind of too much for you to take on. And so you remember the nurse at church gave you a little handout that has a 1, 2, 3 of what to do if you just became a caregiver. And you're like, let me pull out that handout. So step one, get a diagnosis, because that's going to give you the most relevant information to help you figure out how to care for them. And you sit down and you spend like a whole day looking up resources online of local support groups and respite care that can be provided and sources of support. And you call all your family and friends, and you have the grocery shopping delegated, you have the med pickup delegated, you call the pharmacy, you got them set up to give you pill packs so that they can keep track of what medications they're taking and it's not confusing. But you're still feeling kind of overwhelmed. And you go to the next page, and you're like, I remember that nurse at church gave me a burnout caregiver fatigue inventory. And you go down the list and you're like, man, I do feel a loss of privacy. I'm kind of irritable. And I'm kind of having trouble making decisions. I just feel overwhelmed. So great, now you've identified that you have burnout. You pray about it and you really feel like you need to get some help. So you go over to your friend's house, Miss Patsy Priest, who luckily is the owner and manager of a group home for 6 individuals with cognitive disabilities. And she's been doing this for years. And you know that she knows how to give care with excellence and dignity, and that she makes all of their meals 3 times a day, takes them to all their appointments, and keeps all of their medication together. And you're like, man, if Patsy can do it, maybe she can tell me how I can do it. So would you guys help me welcome Miss Patsy Priest up to the interview chair?
I've got 2 knees that need attending to. And I told him the other day, I said, I know I'm going to go back to the doctor. It's going to be surgery.
Let me just get my
timer. What's going to happen to you? And I said,
oh, thanks.
Take care of me. Everybody said, what? I said, you can make me a sandwich. You got to take care of me.
Oh, you're so sweet. Well, Miss Patsy,
I wrote too much.
No, you're fine. It's all going to be useful. What should I do if I'm feeling overwhelmed?
Go to the yard. I was telling her, I said, this is my outlet, is flowers. Mm-hmm. And working in the yard and tending to them. And they're my babies, too. Because I said I talked to them, and the people at the group home, everybody says, listen, Miss Patsy out there talking to those flowers. And of a morning when one's looking, I said, oh, you're beautiful. The colors are so pretty. And then all of a sudden, I see a worm. I run in the house and get the seven dust. I said, I can't eat my flower. But this is my outlet. Is get out there and water the flowers because they're like babies. You've got to keep them watered. You've got to keep mm-hmm. the seven dust on them to keep the bad insects away from them, and then when you get enjoy bringing a bouquet inside or seeing them, I said it's special to me. Mm-hmm. But this is my outlet, and I have got my husband was a farmer, so I've got one side of my building of my home. I've got 12 squash plants that's blooming, so I've got the farm with me now. I got 6 cucumber staked, and they're blooming, so pretty soon I'm going to have some long green cucumbers.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a big, huge thing with 10 tomato plants in it.
Oh my gosh.
So we're waiting for little tomatoes.
And you told me that gardening upholds your faith in God because you get to watch stuff grow.
Yes, 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 because I know He can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that Miracle-Gro is wonderful. Talking about miracles from God. Miracle-Gro is wonderful, too. But I want to read you a Bible verse here. This is Colossians 3:23. Whatever you do, work with it. Work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters. And that is the way I keep going, is the fact that God put me in this.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to do the best I can. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell, I did write this down, so I'm going to tell everybody.
Don't worry.
And I'm going to cry. But anyhow, this group home that my husband and I purchased before he passed away, were closing. And there was four there that time. And they had all been there 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
When the family called us to tell us that the they're closing the doors. My husband's sister was there.
Mm-hmm.
But the sweetest little black girl, precious, 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 came up after the meeting and laid her hand on my cheek and she said, "Miss Patsy, I love you so much." And on the way home, my husband said, "I saw you when Melissa came up and I know you want to open that, keep that group home open." So we did. God blessed us. And I know God blessed us because here I was going to the state, studying books that thick to get my certification. I didn't pass the first time.
But you did eventually.
But I was determined that I was going back and make sure I did the second time. And my QP went with me. And when we got there, and I got my license certification and handed me my certificate back to me, we got in the car and she said, "Are you going to call the group home and tell them that you passed?" I said, "No. We're going to be in Fayetteville, and they're going to be eating supper by the time we get there. And I'm going to see their faces when I tell them this, that we're going to keep the group home open." So I got to see all of them's expression that day when they, when I told them that I had passed.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, this has been 12 years ago, 2010. And I've had to end up buying a home instead of renting it. May of this year, I owned it. God has been so good to me. And that's mine. And so every day that I'm working out in that yard, I said, "God, you planted all these things. You've done all these things for me. Thank you so much." And He wants us to praise Him, praise Him, praise Him. But every one of them there has a story. I can sit here and tell y'all miracles. Miracles after miracles has happened. And matter of fact, I'm going to tell one about Annette.
Please.
It is precious. Annette is from New York. And the day the World Tower fell, that's where she worked. She was off that day.
Mm-hmm.
And this has done something to her. But here she is in my great home. She's a miracle, God. But we don't talk anything about the towers like last week when they had the, I don't say anything about that, but she worked in some of the big stock marketplaces there, very intelligent. She owns stock, and she watches the stock market on television. I don't even know anything about the stock market. But this is amazing that I have got her. And Channing will tell you she's one of the sweetest people that you've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, "It's a house of miracles."
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, I broke down too much.
No, it's perfect. I mean, everything that you shared is exactly.
But like I was telling you about, that's my therapy is getting out there in the morning with my water hose.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's so amazing come over drive with my group home. The people will throw their hands up at me and wave. And
mm-hmm.
I said, I tell them, God bless you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they throw them up. I said, that just thrills me to see people speak to each other for morning or afternoon or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I told Shannon, I said, right there at the hospital, I'm a prayer warrior. When a helicopter goes up, I'm praying for that pilot and that man or woman that's in
mm-hmm.
that helicopter, for God to touch that helicopter. So I'm a prayer warrior. Things and sirens come in.
Yeah.
I said, oh, somebody needs a prayer.
And Patsy, I remember you told me something that I've heard from every single caregiver that I've asked for advice. You told me that you have to put yourself in their shoes, and it's no longer I'm worried about me, but it's I'm worried about
you. Take your me away
mm-hmm.
and put you in there, because you've got to think of their heart, of their care, and what, and don't worry about your me. You hear people that me, everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most important part about a caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband had 10 years of cancer. The last 2 years of the cancer, I retired from 34 years of insurance and to take care of him. And anyhow, I made up my mind that it was going to be constant care. I knew the last 2 years, I didn't know how long he was going to make it, but 10 years, God blessed me with him. And at the end, he got telling me, you know, when his pain was so bad, and that really does a lot to you.
Mm-hmm.
You just, I mean, your loved one, and you can't do anything but pray. But I was constantly close enough with his bedroom as at the end of my house, and I was in my kitchen. He'd say, Patsy. And I said, okay, sweetheart, I'll be there in just a second. Pull off a dish, I mean a pot off the stove, and go running, because you don't know how long you're going to be there helping him
mm-hmm.
get up and go to the bathroom or whatever. But it was, and then he would tell me, he said, I'm so sorry, I got to call you all the time. I said, no. I said, if it was me, you would be here for me. You
mm-hmm.
55 years of marriage, you'd be here with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a caregiver of him, and I don't regret those 10 years or that last 2 years. We were constantly on the road to Duke for radiation, and then we were up here for radiation right
mm-hmm.
here near the end. But I always kept telling him, I said, I wish I could share the pain. I mean, I could take the pain away from you. I wish I could share. No, he said, no, I don't want that. I said, well, I wish it was me dealing with cancer instead of you. And then he'd say, no. But he was so good to me, knowing that I was, you know, doing a good job to take care of him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyhow, like I said, you've got to change that word, me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one that I'm taking care of.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow,
And I see you live that selflessness out every day. You don't mind anytime
mm-hmm.
anybody who lives in the home comes up and asks for an extra cup of water at bedtime or
yeah.
needs an extra serving of food.
Right.
And did you bring some seeds today? So I was
yeah.
going to say that's
more
selflessness.
This is, I said, my mother did this, and I was the world's worst. These plants here came off of two bushes. There what's the day? Saturday. Like Thursday. I went out there and there was 15 big blossoms out there. It was only two seeds. And so what I did, I started saving my seed. And I've got purple zinnia seed in here. That's for next year. And then I've got pink, and then I've got a tall yellow marigolds. I went to Family Dollar, that's how conservative I was, and bought about three packs of seed, 25 cents a pack.
Mm-hmm.
and that's what's in a lot of it's in my yard right now. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, you take each when it, this dies. Now that one's turning a little bit dark. But every petal, when you pull it out, there's a seed on it. I think I could pull one out where you can see it.
There's a metaphor in there somewhere.
That petal. And you just clip that little, that's a new seed for next year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you probably have zinnias in your yard. And but that's a little seed that you dry for mm-hmm. next year. But anyway, I was telling her, I was trying to figure, I had took some bank, when you go get your deposit from the bank, the little envelope said, you get it, Wells Fargo or whatever.
Secret
I said, I put a front on them, I got a little card and put a front on them and wrote my different seeds on there, and then I opened a little envelope. But then I said, well, wait a minute, I run out of those, I don't go to the bank that often. And so what I did, I took a regular envelope and I cut one, I sealed it and cut one end of it off and folded it over and made my own little seed pouch.
Oh,
so
my gosh. So
this will be love next year when I get ready to. And I was going to be real smart and stick on some little packs of seeds so next year you could remember.
Oh my gosh. You're so
and,
smart.
But.
Well, you're truly caring for them.
Anytime they
want
to come by and get a bouquet, they're welcome to come by and get a bouquet, and then you can save your flowers when they die.
She's already given me too many flowers, so y'all gotta take some. I can't keep them all alive. Can we get a round of applause for Miss Cassie? And I'm sure during Q&A we're gonna have some more questions
okay.
for you, because you got too much wisdom that we gotta take advantage
That's
of. Thank you so much,
okay.
Miss Cassie. We're
going to
call you back up here for
Q&A. Okay. I'm
going to
sit here.
Yeah, wherever you're comfortable. You look nice there with your flowers. Yeah, can't wear out the knees. Thank you so much, Miss Patsy. Yeah, I've gotten to caregive alongside Miss Patsy, and I've learned a lot from her, and she has really been a mentor for me as far as what it looks like to be selfless in your caregiving. A couple more things that I would love to touch on as far as burnout. You're fine there, Ms. Patsy, don't worry. A quote from a missionary that I heard recently. There is a doctor who is a missionary doctor in Africa, and she works at a hospital where she sees 3 or 4 babies die every single day. And one of my friends asked her, how do you go back to work? How do you deal with that? And most people, when you ask them a question like that, they'll answer abiding, something along the lines of like, just abide, trust in the Lord with all your heart. But her answer was more along the lines of lamenting, like in the Psalms, the way that David lamented, crying out to God, saying, God, where are you? How long will this suffering last? How can I go on when my suffering is like this? Which is a little bit different from complaining. I used to never lament because I felt bad for complaining, but lamenting always ends in hope, and it involves telling the gospel to yourself. So it's saying, God, how long will this suffering last? How long will the ER waiting room look like the Titanic? How long will I have to be like cleaning off someone's bottom to change them every time that they wet their brief? But God, I know that my suffering is light and momentary compared to the kingdom that's to come. And I know that God, you are forever and that my hope is in you. And she said that that's the main thing that gives her resilience. And she laments during her run while she's praying every single morning before she goes to that hospital. And another quote that I wanted to share, I had a missionary friend who had to come off the field to become a full-time caregiver for his parents. And he shared this bottom quote here. He said, he had tears in his eyes as he was saying this, that it will be worse than you ever imagined it could be, but to an even greater extent, God will be more faithful than you ever knew that he could be. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that be really true working as a nurse. Quick discussion question. Something that we need to make sure that we're doing as a church is coming together to support caregivers. Have you guys experienced that in the church, getting support from other people as a caregiver, or do y'all have any ideas on how we can do that practically as a church?
I think with my mom, after my dad passed away, my mom needed somebody. And so I think some of the ladies in the church would come by once a week and just bring a lunch and sit with her.
Mm-hmm.
And so that made a big deal in her, her mind. She looked forward to that.
That's really meaningful. It's a meal and it's a meaningful conversation.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Any other ideas on what we could do as a church?
My mom in Korea, but she's now 82 years old. Every morning, somebody called to her.
Mm-hmm.
She woke up just checking, and then what did you eat in the morning? Just 5 minutes talking.
Wow.
Every morning, somebody called her from the church.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really good thing.
So they probably had some sort of system set up as far as who's calling every day. But it started with somebody who loves really genuinely and really fiercely. Something that I was thinking about is we already have a women's Facebook group. I was thinking about making a separate page, like for like a caregivers coalition, but I feel like everyone's already on that Facebook page, so doing something within that where we're all linked together and it can be a quick reach out of like, hey, I really need someone to just sit with my mom today while I go run this errand. That could be an easy way for us to be there for each other as caregivers. And a quick note on that, it's really hard to ask other people for help, so that's something we have to learn to be good at as the person needing help as a caregiver and offering help. It helps a lot if you offer something tangible. Don't just say, I'm here for anything that you need.
Mm-hmm.
Say, hey, I want to bring you food. I made a meal train already. Where can we bring it? Or, hey, I want to come over tomorrow. Make a list of stuff that I can do around the house because my house is messy and we can clean it together and then let's go clean your house together. And then another quick note just on conversations with people. When you're going to someone's house and they are in a place of need, something that might make them a little more receptive to receiving something that they need is if they feel like they're getting to help you too. And this can be with somebody who's helping you as a caregiver, or it could be like with an aging parent. So if you're going to your aging parent's house and telling them, hey, I want you to abide by this medication schedule, and I want you to take all the rugs out of your house so you don't slip on them, and I'm taking your car keys away.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to be that excited about it. But if you sandwich that with, hey, I need to come over and ask you for advice about finances because I know that you worked in that your whole life, or, hey, Mom, I really need advice on this work situation. Even if she's in the end stages of dementia, if she's still conversational, she might not give you good advice, but it's going to feel like a lot to her. People need social connection even into the later stages. And sometimes they might not be saying a single thing that makes sense. They might just be using a conversational tone and saying stuff that's out in La La Land. Use a conversational tone and just go with it. That's sometimes what you got to do. All right. So the next section that I want to cover is being prepared. And this section is especially hard, so feel free to cry, feel free to step out. We've got a quick video to watch. Let's see if it'll play.
I got some.
Oh, I have napkins too.
Whatever you want. I'm going to put a title of this speech. I'd say, don't take death. My God. Now, I know you didn't come here to hear about death. But a great American philosopher by the name of Woody Allen once said, I'm not afraid of death. I can talk about death. I just don't want to be there when it happens. Well, the fact is, you and I are all going to be there when it happens. And what I want to talk about is how that happens and what you do to plan for it happening. Now, all of you, me included, I've written my advance directives, and all of you ought to be thinking about writing your own advance directive, how I want my life to come to an end. Now you say, well, no, it's a long, it's way out there. Think about your friends. It happens sometimes to people young, sometimes to old, sometimes suddenly, and you need to be thinking about it and getting it written down so that you can share it with your family. The alternative to that is an advance directive from Virginia Mason or the University of Washington Hospital or Swedish Hospital. Their advance directive is prolong your life as long as they can. Do everything you can, machines, operations, all kinds of stuff. The alternative to that is your advanced directive that says, if I have only a certain amount of time left, I want it to be a certain way. Now, writing your advanced directive is, you know, it's a lot of mundane stuff like, oh, well, I'll tell you a story about my father. My father had a stroke, and so I went in to talk to him, and I said, Dad, if your heart stops, what do you want us to do? He said, well, I don't want those paddles I see on television because they make the body jump, and I don't want that. I want the doctor to press on my chest and get my heart started. So I went back into our family physician, Doug Powell, who'd been with my parents and me for a long time, and I said, Doug, this is what my father chose. He said, it's absolutely the wrong thing. He said, look at me. I'm going to lean on his chest, and I'm going to break his ribs, not because I want to, but because he's a frail old man. So I went back to my father, and I said, Dr. Powell said that you chose the wrong thing. He said, well, that's what Dr. Powell says. Let's do that. Those kind of discussions have to occur. Now, those are sort of mundane ones by comparison to the ones that are really tough. What do you want people to do when it gets down to the end? You know, how long do you want to prolong it? What do you want to go through and prolong it, or do you want to have a life where you can enjoy it?
I'm going to pause it there just for the sake of time, but that's a TED Talk. You can write down Jim McDermott if you want to go watch the whole thing later. He is a great speaker and has a lot of great stories. This conversation will never be easy, and you will never feel fully prepared for it when that time comes. I have a friend named Sylvia Jean who lives in a nursing home. She has had a cognitive disability her whole life where she has too much fluid on her brain, and now she's actually getting toward the end of life stages where she's having to make these decisions for herself. But the whole time she's lived in the nursing home, she has viewed that as her ministry. And I got a call from her a couple months ago, and I was asking her how ministry is going. And she said, well, I have this friend at the nursing home who is on dialysis, which, if you don't know what that is, your kidneys have failed, and you're going to dialysis 3 times a week, and it decreases your quality of life quite significantly if you're having to go all the time. And this lady wanted to get off dialysis. She was ready to just go home. And she asked Sylvia Jean for advice on this. And I asked her, I said, were you scared of that conversation? Were you daunted? How did you know what to say? And she said, well, Channing, I just sat and prayed with her, and I told her to go to the Lord. I told her to take it to the Lord. And then a couple days later, she ended up passing away because she came off dialysis and her kidney failure came to its end. And I sat with her and I held her hand while she died. And if God can use Sylvia Jean and her giftings and abilities to walk somebody through an experiencing like that, then he can use every single person in this room, regardless of how ready you feel or how much preparation you've done. We just need to make sure that we start having these conversations as early as possible. Even if you are giving care to somebody whose disease is pretty advanced and they're not really able to answer a lot of these questions for themselves, have those conversations with your other family members before it becomes a crisis situation. So that you guys kind of already have a plan going into it, so that you're not in that overwhelmed situation in the hospital where you have no idea what to answer when the doctors come and ask you what to do. So I have some help in here. It's an Advanced Directives Conversation Guide. It is a not-so-cheery conversation guide, so of course Darla is going to help us with it. She has been drinking a lot of English tea, and she has actually drank so much tea now that it has resulted in fluid overload on her heart and lungs. So the doctor comes to you and he says, she's not looking so good. We might be getting toward the end here, and you need to go start having this conversation with her right now where she can still participate in the decisions. So you go up to Darla and you say, hey, I went to a conference at church this weekend, and this nurse was talking to us about how it's important for us to be talking about what we would want done at the end of our life. And I know it's not that cheery of a conversation, but I just kind of wanted to start it so I can tell you what I want, and maybe you can tell me what you want. Is that okay with you, Darla?
Yes.
It's perfect.
She still sounds so nice.
Oh, I've had a good life. Oh, good. I don't know how to act British. Okay. I've had a good life. Just tell them to...
It's perfect.
Just tell them to do everything.
that is so helpful. That's great to know. That's a great starting point, and that is the sentiment that a lot of people have. Would you mind if I bring out this little worksheet? Maybe I'll come over like next week and we can make some scones together, and we can talk through this worksheet together so that we can get a little more specific. Just because if I'm ever in that situation for you, I don't want you to be confused or not know what to do when the doctor asks you more specific questions, because that's a pretty general answer. Is that okay with you?
I really don't think I need that, but if it'll make you feel better, sure.
Yeah, you've done so much for me in my life, and this makes me feel like I'm really helping you in your life. So even if you don't think you need it, I would love it if you wouldn't mind. Thanks so much, Starla. So I just want to touch briefly on the advanced directives conversation. There's a whole guide here, good questions to look through, specifics to talk through. And then this one here talks about the main things that you want to establish, like legal documents. So the first one is a healthcare proxy. So who would you want as your medical power of attorney? There is like an automatic person that kicks in, like your spouse would be the first person to make decisions for you if you can't. But it's helpful to name the specifics. And then a living will is the next big thing, that it's more than just like, do you want chest compressions or to be intubated? It's a little more specific, like, do you want artificial nutrition if you would need that? Like, do you want them to put in a feeding tube and give you artificial feeding? And then an even more specific one, at the bottom here, you'll see most form medical orders for scope of treatment. You only need that one if your loved one is nearing like the end stages of their life, and you're going to get into the really detailed decisions as far as like, do we still want to have an IV so we can give narcotics to them? How long would they be okay being on the ventilator if we do go on the ventilator? None of these conversations will ever be fun, but it's going to be so much easier when you're in the hospital having that conversation if you guys have talked about it before. And then I just want to touch briefly on this phrase, we did everything we could. It's something I hear very often from family members in the hospital when we're asking them, your grandma is 125 years old. Would you like us to do chest compressions and intubate her if she loses a pulse and breathing? And they'll think about it and they'll say, well, you know, we have to be able to say that we did everything we could, so just keep her alive. Inevitably, that ends up in grandma is in the ICU on a ventilator for 25 days. There's no such thing as a good death, but there are some deaths that are more painful and involve more suffering than others. And there's a reason that hospice nurses love their jobs and speak so highly of the care that they get to give to people and the way that they get to give people a more comfortable death. And there's also a reason that ICU nurses struggle with a lot of moral distress because they don't feel like they are promoting comfort and decreasing suffering. They feel like they're prolonging the inevitable for people. Mm-hmm. There is no simple answer in any of these situations. It's going to be different for every person and in every situation. The main thing I want to encourage you guys is that as believers, we can't fear death. We're encouraged not to fear death, and we are commanded not to fear death. So when you're in that situation, never listen to the lies of the devil that's telling you that your decisions are what ended in the death of your family member. That is a lie. Your family member, everyone in this room, is going to die eventually, and we get to make decisions on behalf of other people sometimes that make sure that we uphold their dignity and their choices about what they want and how they want to spend the end of their life. Don't ever feel alone in this situation. You're not going to be making these decisions alone. You're going to be calling family, calling friends. You're going to be talking to the doctor and the nurse. We aren't allowed to give you our opinions in that situation, but if you ask us, hey, if this was your family member, what would you do? Then we'll tell you and maybe can help guide you a little bit. Does anyone have any stories they feel like they need to share in relation to this or any questions? Let me just make sure I covered everything here. With your advanced directives, if they are on paper, make sure that you bring them to the hospital. That's part of your go bag. Because unless I have that in my hand, I have to do everything possible to save your family member. Mm. A couple more things that we're going to just touch briefly on. I'm going to let you guys look through this at home. It's a guide of where to seek care, ER versus urgent care versus primary care. And then at the bottom, you can go through the ER go bag as far as stuff that you need to have packed to go to the doctor. and we've got 5 minutes left for Q&A time. Sorry, that was a lot of content and a lot of really heavy content. I'm going to stick around afterward if anybody needs to talk. This is my personal cell phone number. If you guys need respite care, if you need a nurse to be on call to come to your house to help you take care of your family member for a day, for a weekend, if you want doctor advice, my husband's a doctor and I can contact him for you. We are the church and I want to be the church to you, so please call me. Oh, and then I wanted to give them that Elizabeth Elliott podcast. I didn't get to share the story that I wanted to share with this, but Elizabeth Elliott says, if you don't know what to do, these are the steps that you should follow when you're feeling overwhelmed in caregiving. So with that, I'll close. Thank you so much. And if you guys have any questions, I'll be here.
Do you have a recommendation for like a false alert device?
Somebody asked me that on Facebook.
It was me.
Yeah. I have a neighbor who's the guy who lives there has Huntington's and they have cameras in the home, and I need to get the name of the company, but he can't like answer the door, so I have to wait until his caregiver is passing by so I can ask her. So I will get it. Text me your name if I don't already have it so I can make sure I get it to you.
You know what? I will say these iPhone watches my family bought them for me for Mother's Day. But if your heart rate goes up or down, your blood pressure goes whatever, calls 911, it alerts your emergency people, and they're calling you and asking if you need an ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't answer the phone, it has your whereabouts, and it will send someone there.
Also does fall detection, too.
It does what?
Fall detection.
Yeah.
That's
so I'm just saying,
perfect.
This is a wonderful gift to my family bought me the watch.
The biggest deal with that is like if it's especially somebody with dementia, like it needs to be charged once a day, and so that's hard. So I love the Apple Watch.
Yeah, because you don't have to.
But it needs to be charged consistently, and if it's not, then it's not going to do any good. So just something to think about.
Oh yeah, does it be charged?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's smart.
We use a gizmo for my grandpa because he's aware enough. More so than my grandma sometimes, to charge it, keep it charged. And we got it from Verizon, so it detects if he falls, it immediately calls my mother, or whoever we set up to be the first contact if he falls. But for the front page, I guess, or the other list that we circle a few things. So my grandma has dementia, my grandpa has diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
So he falls a lot. He can't feel anything past his knees practically.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm usually going over when he falls if I get a call from my grandma saying, you know, he's on the floor, can't get up. But grandma has dementia that's progressing pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Still driving around. We've put a detection on her vehicle so we can watch where it goes because she gets lost now, that kind of thing. But how do you... Like I mentioned, you know, I can't be the one all the time to like, hey, you know, let me help with the clutter because, you know, you can't hardly walk through the house.
Mm-hmm.
These paper stacks, magazines, such and such. But she's the caregiver for my grandpa most of the time, you know, and I don't know lists of medications. Usually when we go and ask, like, we need to get a list down. We need to figure out what you're on for both of you so that we know you're not mixing up his medication with yours, all that kind of stuff. And usually it's a lot of, I don't want to do that today, we'll do that tomorrow, do we have to do that now, do, you know, it takes up too much of your time, and I'm like, I don't work. I have all day long, every day, for the most part. How do you get past that with her, you know, I can ask doctors, but I don't have that, I can't go into a doctor with her and be like, hey, can you give me this, can you give me that? They're usually work with me, but I don't have power of attorney. I don't have, you know, that's my mother. So how do I go if I need to go to the house and Papa is having an issue, other than calling an ambulance to be like, hey, I think he took like her medication or something. How do I get her to be like, you know, let's go through this right now because we have time. You have plenty of time. You don't need to go through another newspaper.
Yeah.
You know, and it's constantly, let's do that another day.
Right. She gives. Yeah. Do you want to answer?
Well, one thing you could do is, do you take her places?
Yeah, I usually I try.
Okay, you go by the drugstore with her in the car and get a list from the drugstore. They'll print it out for you and it tells what they're taking and how much.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have a checklist.
It just changes so often.
But she has to give you, you know, she has to be in the car.
Yeah.
But another thing, maybe you could get with your mom and get medical too.
Because even hospital visits, I keep track because I take them since she gets lost so much, and that way I know what's going on to
mm-hmm.
convey it to my mother.
Mm-hmm.
But she'll cancel appointments without me knowing, and then I'll be like, hey, we got an appointment today. She's like, oh, no, I canceled that. And
mm-hmm.
I can't do anything at that point other than maybe try to call a doctor
mm-hmm.
to be like, you know, she canceled this, or did you cancel this? Because her story
mm-hmm.
is mixed up. I can't tell which one's right. You
mm-hmm.
know, and then all of a sudden she hasn't been to the last four doctor's appointments
mm-hmm.
because she's canceled them on her own because
mm-hmm.
she doesn't want to leave the house. You know, and then...
Just to clarify, mom has dementia, and she's in charge of paperwork and overall caregiving for dad who has diabetes.
Right.
Okay. I would say that she can help be a caregiver for dad who has diabetes, but that's going to get into more of, like, social work and legal, who
yeah.
can help you be taking over more of, like, I am the actual caregiver, and maybe they
yeah.
can still live by themselves, but, like, if she has to take him to the ER, they need, like, rapid fire, like, is he on a blood thinner? Does he want this? Does he want this? So that would really be, like,
right.
you are the caregiver. Like, she wouldn't be the appropriate go-to person
mm-hmm.
in that situation. So I would say, like, finding an elder care attorney, if she is pushing back and doesn't want you to be his POA. I know that's, like, extra money to spend,
mm-hmm.
but there, when I was researching for this, there was just so much about they can help you with, like, financing care and getting all of those documents set up, and then a social worker would be really helpful as well if you can get one through your primary care physician, or they could be able to refer you to one who can help you get that better set up.
Okay, there is a thing called Legal Shield, and you can be a member for $28, and they'll do all the living will, the all that stuff, and you get like three or four different things free, and then there's a discount.
Mm-hmm.
So it's much, much cheaper than going to an attorney.
Perfect. I'm going to put that in my notes.
Alicia, I think your primary thing is you need to, if your mom is the medical overseer, you probably need to do everything through her.
Yeah.
Because I know with doctors, we have one person who is a primary care overseer, and the doctors will work with the person who has a medical attorney,
right.
or medical privileges. So they will give that medical the person who my parents have written as the medical, they'll do everything to that person. But if you're not the medical attorney, they will not give you anything,
right.
which is good.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have to do is kind of with your grandparents, you're probably going to have to establish. They're going to have to establish somebody as their medical. I can't remember the term you call it, but kind of the overseer of their medical.
And that is my mother, but she's in Louisiana, and I'm the only one here.
Yeah.
So I'll usually ask her,
oh.
but for her to get through the doctors and get lists and
what you
talk with my grandparents,
is get your mom to call in and say, okay, my daughter is here,
yeah.
and so I'm. So any information your mom can say, any information you give it to my daughter, and my daughter will give it to me.
Mm-hmm.
So you can
do
that.
You could probably piggyback a couple of people, I'm sure. Especially if one is local and you're
it's just
yeah, it stationed somewhere else.
Sorry, y'all, real quick. I just don't want y'all to be late to your next class, but I'm gonna make
it's
sure
lunch.
That we can
it's
all.
Okay.
Oh, it's lunch.
It's
oh,
lunch.
You're
okay.
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 Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Okay.
But we can't do that. Your mom call the doctor and say, you know, my daughter is taking her grandparents. Please give her all their information, and she'll give it to me.
Before anybody leaves, I let Channing do
that.
It
does have to be notarized, and you get to go to the bank. Just let me know, because I've
my sister is primary, but I've been able to, like, I've taken my mom to the doctor.
And you didn't have to get
And I didn't have to do anything. They recognize me as, you know, my sister, and my sister called them and said, look, my other sister, this is her name, she's coming in, she's bringing my mom in, please give her any information that you have.
Okay, that's good.
And so
they go
into the doctor's office.
Because they had me go to the doctor's office.
Yeah.
go get
same
a medical.
Thing with the hospital. My sister would say, you know, my, my other sister, this is her name. If you bring her in, please give her any information.
That is awesome.
And my sister has always asked for two copies.
Yeah. Well,
one,
that makes
one,
sense.
One for my mom and one for her.
Yeah.
So she's always said, oh, I like to have two copies of that.
That's good.
So that my mom feels like she's in control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's her medical, it's every, you know. But my sister always has an extra copy if something comes up.
Mm-hmm.
But she just puts in a notebook.
Real quick before y'all go, we do have some presents for two lucky winners. It's a book called One Half Day at a Time by Doreen Rollins. It's like a devotional and a journal. She was a caregiver for her spouse for many, many years, and she just gives really good Christian insight and advice, and she lets you in on the messiness. So there's two lucky winners. I already pulled them. It's Jackie Frank and Soon Young Kim.
Yay!
Yay.
Yay.
Thanks, Channing. This was great.
Thank you guys.
You guys had a lot of helpful stuff. Yeah, and I'm a nurse. I'm not a social worker, so you guys added a lot of helpful content.
Congratulations!
Yeah.
You're
lucky.
And
it's
nice to be bigger.
Oh,
yeah.
She made it nice.
I don't know. I can't do it.
That's all I can do.
You talk without us on the next time?
Over a year.
And then my son, he just
Or just text me.
Okay, I didn't see you.
Yeah.